because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind, Wisconsin's Eye summary of this week in the Capitol. I want to welcome back Brandon Schultz.
Thank you.
You helped us on some post-debate analysis. Now we'll be doing a post-mortem on the governor's presidential campaign. So thanks.
You bet.
So thanks. The governor actually began unofficially running for president after he was reelected last November.
Oh, yes.
But he officially announced it on July 13th at the Waukesha County Expo. Fast forward now 9 weeks later, Monday, September 21st, let's listen to about a minute of what he said in his announcement that he's suspending his presidential campaign.
We are a party that believes in the American people, not the federal government. These ideas will help us win the election next fall, and more importantly, these ideas will make our country great again. To refocus the debate on these types of issues will require leadership. While I was sitting in church yesterday, the pastor's words reminded me that the Bible is full of stories about people who were called to be leaders in unusual ways. Today, I believe that I am being called to lead by helping to clear the field in this race so that a positive conservative message can rise to the top of the field. With this in mind, I will suspend my campaign immediately. I encourage other Republican presidential candidates to consider doing the same so that the voters can focus on a limited number of candidates who can offer a positive conservative alternative to the current frontrunner. This is fundamentally important to the future of the party and, more importantly, to the future of our country.
Help me connect some dots. This is a fighter. Mm-hmm. This is unintimidated. And in his speech, he says, now I feel called to lead by helping to clear the field. Connect the dots for me.
It's money. I mean, its bottom line is money. If you read all the postmortem stories, they've been about how Walker's campaign blew through all this money and didn't have the resources to kind of continue. Now, if this were mid-January, be a different story. You can kind of chicken coop wire, whatever you want to call it, you know, patch together a campaign for 2 weeks with Iowa on February 1st and see how you do. But we're talking September. The money he'd have to pull together, the fundraising was drying up. He doesn't have the resources to dip in his own pocket, take out a $1 million loan or something like McCain did in 07. It's just not there for him financially. So that was a driving factor of they looked at the plan and said, okay, I talked to Rick Wiley, this week's campaign manager, so he put together a plan for Walker and said, we can do this, scale back to about 20 people, focus on Iowa, $1 million a month it was, but I'm not sure we can get this done with that, you know, with that. I don't think there's a path forward, if you will. It just wasn't going to work for him.
Brandon, he peaked too early. He peaked in January and February the wrong year, right? A year early?
You know, in a traditional sense of traditional presidential campaigns and sweepstakes, you can make that claim. But this is beyond what we've ever seen. 17 candidates starting so early, everything's front-loaded. Candidates that take the air out of the room, that disregard all the traditional things about a presidential campaign. And it just goes that fast. It's lightning fast. It's a 24-hour news cycle. So the application of traditional strategy and outlooks and how to score presidential campaigns is gone. This is an entirely different set of circumstances. And you see the fast rise that Governor Walker had and carried that for a while. But what happened with debates that we've never seen before? What happened with this 24-hour news cycle? Was the other factors of other candidates? This changed the whole dynamic of the race, and you can see how that would cause you to burn up money. It makes you understand how they had to grow rapidly to be able to sustain what they had to kind of feed that engine, and it went down as fast as it came up.
Single most important factor in this fall: debate performance, or words like hypothetical. I'm not going to answer hypotheticals. If you're in Washington, you're a career politician, I'm a public servant. Single most important factor in this.
Well, Wiley said the birthright citizenship was beating at the end when I talked to him. So if you add in, it's a 5-week implosion of the two debates, and then right in the middle of that was the birthright citizenship stuff, and it just seemed to reinforce the punting on evolution, Canadian wall is a legitimate issue to talk about, all these other verbal gaffes. It just kind of snowballed, and it became a death spiral. And so I think that's what really drove this, was this horrible 5 weeks where, remember, going the first debate, he was to the right of the front runner, Jeb Bush, in the polls, right? He was center stage. If they had taken recent polls for this last one, like just using the last 3 weeks, he, I don't know if he would have made it. He was down in asterisk level in the last CNN poll before he dropped out. That's how quickly things turned around for him.
Brandon, P.S. on that?
You know, again, everything you do and say is under a microscope, and then it's in the headlines, and then it's, you know, on news. And you have a couple of those, and all of a sudden you are that story. And it's also equally difficult to turn it around and make mid-course corrections. Again, if we were in a traditional-style campaign, you would have time to make those corrections. You would have time to reach out and solve it. But in this case, one right after another, not only Governor Walker, but other candidates, too. It's almost impossible. So, you know, you really, you're just walking on a tightrope without any net below you.
Follow up. What do you think Governor Walker learned about himself in running for president, Brandon, in this last year?
You know, I think the stage was entirely different than what he had been accustomed to. And while I think my guess is they thought obviously they were ready and they could make a run for it, there were probably a lot of things that they learned on the go. And, you know, we probably won't know that for a while. But there were a lot of new elements that were brought into not only the functions of the campaign, but him personally, what he had to deal with and the travel schedule. I mean, the guy never let up. It was not like he took a break here and there. He was always on the go, every state, every camera. And, you know, there was most likely a learning curve in there that I don't know if they anticipated it or not.
J.R., Trump told CNN, well, he's told everybody, that when I got into Iowa, I was the Walker Slayer. Is that right?
That Iowa is the Walker Slayer, that Donald Trump is the
Donald
Walker
Trump
Slayer.
Was, I'm sorry, start over.
Well,
Trump said when I got into Iowa, Walker fell precipitously.
Trump is part of the Walker problem, but if you know, it's interesting to read some stories, that Trump is not why Walker fell. Walker was his own worst enemy at times. The foundation of the campaign is, I'm a straight shooter, I'm a fighter, I'm intimidated, and when you're making these verbal gaffes, and some of them are, if you know Scott Walker, if you ask him a question, he will answer it affirmatively to start the answer, like,
absolutely,
yes, I am acknowledging your answer or question, now I'm going to give you my answer. That came back to bite him several times. Like, I don't think Scott Walker got the impression that he really wants a wall between us and Canada. He was saying a legitimate issue to say, kind of as that affirmative tick, if you will, he has in the way he answers questions. That got him in trouble. That wasn't because of Donald Trump. It's because Scott Walker has this kind of habit, going back to his days, you know, we've known him, where he will say something different in Eau Claire than he does in La Crosse and Wausau, but he's kind of brainstorming out loud, if you will, to reach his finer point. If you're doing that there, no big deal. You don't have a media pack following you every single stop. Now, he had the same reporters every stop, and everywhere that changed was a story. That was different for him. Now, the Trump thing, that does play into the Walker trying to be, I feel your anger. You know, I know you're frustrated with Washington, and so am I, but I've got a record to do something about it. He tried to tap into that. Maybe the saying, I'm not a career politician, maybe that was part of him trying to relate, because not just to Trump, but also Fiorina and Carson have become, you know, major factors in the polls as well, to tap into that anti-establishment, anti-DC vein. But it wasn't because Donald Trump was all of a sudden bloviating the campaign that Scott Walker fell apart.
Trump is overreaching when he says he drove Walker down in Iowa.
Donald Brandon? Trump overreaches on everything. There's not a thing that he doesn't overreach on. I agree. I don't think Donald Trump was the problem because Donald Trump attacked everybody. So, you know, I think it is more a function of you are under such a microscope. Everything you see. Jared laid it out exactly the way the governor approaches things and how he talks and what he says. But for that national press corps, you're in a microscope for everything. And it's not just you. It's, you know, it's who's on your campaign and who said what and what state chairman said this. Everything is just, you know, it's 1,000 times what we're used to here in Wisconsin and what, you know, and how Governor Walker is.
So Monday, Tenette Walker, the governor's wife, calls a meeting at the executive residence. Jim Villa's there. Mike Grebe's there. Tenette is there. A few others are there. Brandon, you've been in these meetings. What would you have recommended that the governor do? Because do you scale back? Do you go from 90 employees to 20? Do you go all in on Iowa, Iowa or bust? Or, governor, you should consider getting out?
I think you have that contingency plan of what can we do? Because you want to put as many things on the table to let the boss figure out where you're going to go. Do you have that short run? Do you pull now? Do you retrench? Where do you go? Keep in mind that whatever they could have done in the next week or month may not have had that payoff that they needed to move themselves in the polls or to show that the campaign was you know, ratcheted back up, because that really wasn't going to come until February. So you would go through the rest of October and maybe into November with what event, what moment would have elevated your campaign to get poll numbers back so that you can get into that debate? There was probably a risk that he wouldn't be in the next debate at, you know, a half of a percent. So while they may have been able to exercise that, you know, that scaled down operation, would it really have produced visible results that you could go to donors and the media would see and say, yeah, look at the Walker campaign. They've done this and they've done this and they've done this. That's hard to do. I mean, you're not operating in a vacuum. There's all those other campaigns.
So if the governor goes, what do you think, Tanette? What do you think, Mike? What do you think, Jim? What do you think, Brandon? What's your answer?
Not sitting in the room, I'm not certain I know the dynamic of that.
That's why you can answer the question.
I would have said just what I said now. We could do something for the short term, but I don't know yet where the payoff points are that could show that we've come back, that we've made a difference, and that we can keep our donors and we can keep the media and we can keep all the pundits looking at us like we've come back. Where does that comeback kid come into play? And without any real significant events in Iowa for the next 30 to 40 days, how can you make that case? It's very tough to make. And as J.R. said earlier, it's money. How do you keep fueling that fire and feeding the beast when you have limited cash flow, when your expenses are as high as they probably can be, even if you cut back?
Okay, let's make a transition. The New York Times used the term Governor Walker back on the job. There's a picture here of him holding a staff meeting, surrounded by 11-12 of his staffers in the Capitol. He's trying to reconnect with Wisconsin. He immediately, his spokesman say two things. I will serve out this term, which ends in 2018, and I don't want a federal cabinet appointment. Here's my question. Could he have said anything else? I mean, you're not going to stand there and say, I'm looking for the first way out, are you? So these are no big surprises in either of these statements. What do you think, JR?
If you're a cynic, you'll note that Scott Walker talked about last year about finishing out his term as governor and not worrying about the presidency. He'll go back today as a county executive and deflecting questions about, will you serve out before as county executive? You know, there's a pattern there where, again, if you're a cynic, you kind of go, well, that's what you're saying now. And he also said, I won't seek a cabinet appointment. Now, there's a difference between seeking and being offered. So I know I'm splitting hairs there, but
okay. Let's
be honest, we're in politics, you know, so Yes. Words matter in this. I'm not saying Scott Walker is looking for a way out, but, you know, hey, look, if somebody comes up and says, Mr. Walker, I want you to be vice president, I think he's going to say no, or I want you to be secretary. I mean, that's going to be hard to turn down. So he also, by the way, can't be a lame duck for the next 3 years. So he's trying to reassert that I'm not going away. You're not going to have the keys to the car. I'm the adults back in the room kind of thing. I'm back. Now, the question is for lawmakers is, well, you were gone for X number of months or not really around. I know you're on the phone, but not really here. We've been driving the car for a while. We want an equal seat at the table. How's that going to work out? We'll see. What's the agenda going to be? Well, how is he trying to reassert himself? He's going to have another conservative agenda, if you will, or something big and bold in his words to carry him through. That's tough to say, you know.
The Marquette poll puts his job approval rating as 39%. Wisconsinites going to welcome back their governor?
He'll work hard, and he'll work hard to reconnect with Wisconsin, Wisconsin voters. He'll work hard with the legislature. Legislators I talked to said, that's not going to be a problem. You know, look, we've been in a lot of fights. That's not going to be a problem. He's at his best, I think, when he's in the state and he's going around. So can he drive those numbers back up? I'm certain he can. There is a limited window in terms of what they can do legislatively because the sense is the legislature wants to go home in about February. So there's not much time, and there's three or four issues on the table already. Now civil service has been added to that. How much more will the legislature want to take on? And what they do, that's fine, and the government will, you know, be a part of it and will drive some of it. But then he has a whole long spat, you know, from February till the end of the year, November, until, you know, they start the next round of lots of things he can do. And I would suspect not only all in Wisconsin. He still remains a player on the national stage. He's now the guy that can come back and analyze all of them because he's not a candidate anymore. And he could probably be a little bit more free with what he wants to say, and he's demonstrated that in his exit speech when he said, you know, I'm doing this to lead. He could still play on that. So I don't think he, you know, goes into bed, pulled the covers over his head, said, you know, I'm done for a while.
He could still be a surrogate. He could do that effectively in some places with certain audiences. And by the way, don't forget mentioning the pundit thing. Mitt Romney loved the advice Scott Walker gave him in 2012. So just ask his campaign people. But, you know, Walker is not necessarily going to go away. The other thing, though, is remember this. Look at the language Walker's used in the campaign trail for president versus what he used last fall, your election bid. Much different talking about abortion and other things. How does he steer that ship back to the middle? Because we are a purplish state, depending which election it is. He can't run a red state campaign in a purple state unless it's another great year for Republicans in 28, if, and big, big if, he wants to run again. There's a way he's got to kind of maneuver back to more of a centrist message, if you will, or at least the language he uses about these conservative things that are more palatable for the average Wisconsin voter.
Jared, let's look ahead. What are his next big ideas? We'll talk about civil service reform in a little bit, but things beyond that, I mean, is he going to try to abolish the corporate income tax, which just took in $1 billion for the first time? Where do you think he'll go?
I've been starting to ask around a little bit, and honestly, lawmakers I've talked to don't really know for sure what his big idea is. The agenda for the fall has been kind of small because, just be honest, they've done a lot in 5 years. There's not much left. They've tackled right to work, prevailing wage, Act 10. I mean, go on the list. There's a lot of stuff. So civil service would be another big deal.
Yeah.
Now, I know Brandon's not a big fan of this one, but minimum markup is something that some are pushing the Capitol right now.
Right.
There's GAB reform or overhaul, demolishment, whatever you want to use with it, campaign finance reform. John Doe's. But where are the other big ticket items? I mean, they've done a lot of stuff. Maybe another tax cut, but that's more of a budget thing in 17-19. And oh, by the way, transportation fund still has got an issue long term.
Oh, yeah.
Medicaid, still an issue long term. So there are still some problems to deal with.
Two more questions on this before we go to a different topic. Brandon, the future for Governor Walker, 2018. Seek re-election, run against Tammy Baldwin. What's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me, Governor.
Third term?
My gut tells me, Governor, third term. I don't see the Senate piece in the cards. I think it goes to a little bit of what JR is talking about, and that is we have some issues on the table now, but what does he have in store for after this next round of elections, and how does that set him up? I certainly don't see him going away.
And you don't see him closing the door on running again for president in 4 years, do you?
No, I think, you
was
know,
was his brand damaged by this experience?
No, I don't think so. He is not the first candidate to come up and run hard and have to scale back and say it didn't happen. Not the first, not going to be the last. And we don't know what's going to happen with the Republican primary going forward. A lot of people, when he made that speech on Monday, went back to 2006 right away and said, "Jesus, the same, similar circumstances, wasn't going to make it, bowed out early." And, you know, helped clear the field and, you know, for that race. Got a lot of good points for that. Does this happen as well? It may or may not. But, you know, we have in the last 6 months have all tried to guess what's going to happen, project what's going to happen. We've all been wrong on so many fronts because, again, this is so different. So looking forward to Scott Walker 2018 and beyond, I think the door's open for whatever he may choose to do. I think he guides a lot of where he wants to go and certainly doesn't have to worry about being forced to go one way or another. He can make the decision that's his future.
Your thoughts on 2018 and the governor, JR?
Well, depends on 16. If a Republican wins the White House, right, he could be in the cabinet. He's not seeking a post. He could be vice president, whatever. But there's a longer window for Walker to be to have to remain relevant for the run. So if you're a Republican in the White House and you're still governor, you need a platform. So maybe run for a third term is that platform to do it. If a Democrat wins, however, well, that's a different story. Part of it, Walker's issue was that he was running for election last fall, came right off that trail and right into presidential talks. I mean, like literally, like days after he won, he was out talking about, okay, what are we going to do?
Yep.
That compressed the window to figure out foreign policy. I mean, Governor Walker knows his Wisconsin issues, but domestic stuff beyond his kind of comfort zone was obviously a struggle at times. If you are not governor and after January or whatever of 19, you have a window of fully focused on running for president again. So there's that option before him. The other thing with Walker and the brand is, remember, I mean, Ronald Reagan even ran 68, 76, and then he got an 80.
Good
John McCain, 2000, then 08. Bob Dole. At least 88 and 90. So, I mean, there's that. There is that path where Republicans before have failed in the nomination and come back. There's also the Rick Perry example. They so damaged the brand in 12 that he never got the ground in 16. Scott Walker, I think, is too determined if he's done any permanent damage to him nationally. There's lots of time to rehabilitate that image. But if he comes out the door, we're being totally hypothetical right now.
Yeah.
But comes out the door in January of 19 and stumbles verbally, it'd be all over the same stuff all over again. So that's the the warning, if you will, for Scott Walker long term.
Okay, thank you. Let's turn to a new subject. Yesterday, it surprised me. I'm going to ask you if it surprised you. The Republicans announced major changes to the civil service system that they want to make. 30,000 state employees operate within the civil service system. Just to summarize, they want to abolish the civil service exam, set a goal of hiring within 60 days. DOA would be the hiring agency for all state employees. We are excluding here the UW and the employees of the legislature. They operate under a separate system. They want to restore merit-based and lump-sum bonuses to the best employees. They want to define for the first time just cause, reasons that employees can be fired. They want to shorten the appeal process. They want a uniform 2-year probation period, but allow agencies to waive that after a year. Some of the horror stories yesterday, JR, they were pretty amazing. I mean, you had a parole agent doing drugs with a parolee, and you had a state worker watching porn for 4.2 hours, according to Senator Roger Roth, a day, couldn't be fired because that employee had not been told about just cause. Did you see this basket of changes coming?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I only have this much bandwidth, and it's been dominated by Walker and other things. So, no, I mean, if you go back and look at the tea leaves from the last couple of years, you can see that they've been angling to do other things with this stuff. So is it a surprise that they want to do it? No. That coming up right now? Sure. I mean, I think it caught us off guard. But for Republicans, they're looking at this, and they want to run government more like a business, right? And that's kind of what we're getting at. You know, Steinke talked about in the private sector, it takes me 100 days to hire somebody, there's a problem. You know, I need it to be down to like 30 days max to get somebody in and out. Oh, by the way, the next 5 years, 23% of our employees are going to be eligible for retirement.
And 10 years,
40%.
Yep.
You need to speed this process up. Now, if you're a state employee, you're going, okay, I don't trust you guys. You did Act 10, all right? Now you're talking about this. What about my bumping rights? If you don't like me, you're eliminating my job, and if I lose bumping rights, I have to go back to the line of DOA and apply for something else. What's going to happen there? They're worried about those kinds of things and saying, yeah, there are some horrible people who do bad things at government, but most of us don't, and you're threatening my job security, and I feel like, maybe it's not justified, but I feel like you guys, it's going to be back to patronage system, where if I'm not a Walker back or I sign the recall,
yep,
you're going to find a way to get rid of me. So, I mean, now that's, again, paranoia doesn't mean they're not out to get you, right? But that's the state employee mindset of, I've been through so much the last 5 years, what's next? So that's going to be the rub, I think, in this conversation going forward for state employees.
Well, we don't even have a bill yet. And Representative Barker, Democratic Representative Barker, said, let's see how deep that bill goes. It's one thing for them to stand at a press conference and outline these are the talking points. It's another for all of us to see that, to actually
see the bill. And Steinke's saying, we want to reward good employees. We want to make this a better product. He's also saying that in the probation period, his justification is, right now you've got, what, 6 months? And they know if you get hired on full time, you're not going away because it's hard to fire state employees. So they're saying, if you're just okay at your job, the default mode in his mind is to get rid of you because they'll be, in his words, stuck with you for 30 years. This gives you a longer window to get into it and, you know, make sure you prove yourself. He's saying these are good things for state employees, and they'll actually have just cause defined. So you know if you are watching porn, you are done, like first offense kind
of
thing.
Yes.
If you have sex in a conference room, you are done on first offense. So those are things that they think are actually good for employees. But again, if you feel like you've taken a lot of punches, you're going to be a little bit wary at this point.
I agree. Let's go to the second biggest news story of last week. Supreme Court Justice Patrick Crooks died in his chambers of natural causes a few hours before Governor Walker announced his decision on the presidential race. Just to quickly run through his, he worked in the Pentagon for the Army, 64 to 66. He was a Green Bay attorney, Brown County judge, elected to the Wisconsin Supreme Court in 1996 and 2006. This was the last time a Supreme Court justice was on a post. Because then you had Ziegler, then you had Gableman, and then so.
Don't forget, it was back to back too, because Ann Walsh Bradley was unopposed the year before. Right. That's never going to happen again, I don't think.
Right, Supreme Court Justice, 1996, 2015. Any memories of Justice Crooks? I'll go first. I thought he couldn't understand the emerging dysfunction and the partisanship and the bitterness. He wanted us, he wanted the court go back to that collegiality. Your thought, Brandon?
He did, and it then kind of transitioned into he tried to be the go-between, to be on the, you know, to work with the liberal side of the court on some things and to work with the conservative side of the court on some things. And whether he was successful at that, you know, yes, he did join in some opinions, but the way that the court had gone, it wasn't something he could solve.
Okay.
I talked to Scott Jensen, actually ran both of Crooks' first year, I remember, ran in 95 against Bradley, actually, and lost. And he came back the year but one, and just remembered him as a good Irish Catholic guy with a good Irish Catholic sense of humor and sense of family. So those are the things that people are talking about in remembering him.
Well, Chief Justice Roggenzack called him an outstanding jurist, a thoughtful decision maker, a colleague with a wonderful Irish sense of humor. In addition to serving as a circuit court judge on the Supreme Court, he made significant contributions to the legal profession as a lawyer and a teacher. Good friend and colleague, greatly missed. This is somebody he didn't, Justice Crooks didn't always agree with Pat Roggenzack, but that's a pretty good tribute. Okay, but in the Capitol, what happens next? Mm-hmm. Names that the governor could appoint, Court of Appeals Justice Rebecca Bradley, mm-hmm. Court of Appeals Justice Mark Gundrum, new Dane County Judge James Troupas, who had been a GOP war horse. Any other names you heard? Should any of those three be stricken from the list?
Oh, I don't think that Troupas is a real option. I mean, really, honestly, your list begins and ends with Rebecca Bradley. I mean, that is the conservative favorite. The conservative groups who get involved in Supreme Court campaigns have made clear that they're going to back her in the spring. They would be quite disappointed in Scott Walker if he didn't appoint her to the bench. So I think that's really, she's the favorite right now for that appointment. Now, that's not to say that you couldn't try something different. You know, you can't, I don't think you can, like, say somebody, I'll appoint you only if you serve out till this term and not run for your election,
right,
kind of thing. But there is that option to float out there. I don't get the impression it's a real one for Scott Walker. It's all about, you know, putting somebody young and conservative on the court who could be there for a long, long time.
Can you see either Gundrum or Troupas, Brandon?
No, because I don't think this is a ceremonial appointment, as Jair said. I mean, the governor's going to have to appoint somebody who can sit down day one, be engaged in the oral arguments, go back and review the arguments that have already occurred. And then there are some very critical decisions coming up that I don't think a lot of people want to see 3-3 decisions. So this isn't one of those, could you just go there for a while and, you know, hang out and write some opinions, make some decisions, and then bye-bye, and then we'll have an election and new justice. I think this is a long-term decision, just as though you were going to appoint somebody for 10 years, you know, whether it's that. So you just don't take it lightly. And I think the governor will have ample opportunity with his Judicial Review Commission to look at the qualifications of all the candidates. And there are some good ones. I'm saying it's not the case. But, you know, I think JR is right. The sense is that Judge Bradley has demonstrated her intellect, her skills, her talents, her understanding of the law, her experience she brings, and, you know, do you really need to look beyond that?
Well, I looked it up. The governor has appointed 5 of the 16 members of the Court of Appeals and 48 of the 249 circuit court judges. Next issue, the ban on fetal tissue has stalled in the legislature, J.R. Assembly Speaker Voss said he doesn't have 50 votes for it.
Well, what he's saying is that I have told Clayfish and Jock, if you got 50 votes, it'll go to the floor. I only got 50 votes right now without changes. So that's the rub. And Jacques and Clayfish immediately say, we've got the votes, we have support. And I went back to Voss yesterday and said, okay, they say they've got the votes. And Voss said, I've asked for a list, I haven't got it yet.
I see.
And Clayfish was like, I've never in all my time here been asked for a list. So there is a little bit of a tension, if you will, right now about that bill. But the issue is the research. What's the impact on research? What line will you draw? And oh, by the way, if you're in a swing district, those ads write themselves about how you oppose, you know, quote-unquote life-saving research, you know, kind of thing. It's not a really helpful message in some places.
Well, and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said WMC's opposition may take a toll on this issue. Yet, as you say, the conservatives are restless. That statement from Senator Steve Nass,
yes.
I call in leaders to vote on this bill.
And they want to get something done. Voss and Fitz are both on board to get something done. It's a matter of when's it get done. Okay. And what's the form? What's it look like when it's done?
Okay, time for the WisPolitics stock report. Rising.
So we talked about Rebecca Bradley, you know, that she is basically in line for this appointment. She's a favorite for it. There's a couple of things to keep in mind, all right? One, Governor Walker's appointees to the bench have had their difficulties in Dane and Milwaukee counties. Not to say they happen statewide, but if you're not Rebecca Bradley running for Supreme Court, you're going to use that against her. This is a partisan appointment by a guy whose numbers not very good right now, and try and beat her up on that. Will it be effective? Who knows? But there is an opportunity if you're a progressive, moderate, whatever opponent to hit her with that. But she is a favorite for that spot. Senator Walker's appointed her to the Milwaukee County bench, the appeals court. If he didn't appoint her to the Supreme Court, it'd almost be like a message from Walker of, I don't have faith in you. That's
trifecta
like the other
appointment
thing.
Coming.
Yeah, so keep that in mind. She is very much a favorite for that appointment right now.
Mixed. Fetal tissue?
Here's the thing. And so I've heard this before, but there's a conservative wing in the Assembly Republican Caucus that's butting heads with the leadership and the moderates over a bill, like prevailing wage, for example. What's happening with this one, though, is you've got more members, from what I understand, who are standing up saying, I'm not comfortable with this. We need to find a compromise. And Voss has appointed several members to go and try to work out some kind of deal to address the research stuff. Now, here's the thing. When you talk to people who really like this bill, even some who aren't happy about it, they tell you, if you put on the floor right now, you might get 50 votes because members would be petrified of the fallout from, like, right-to-life groups, pro-life, that they would beat them up so badly it wouldn't be worth voting no. The other thing is, if you're a leadership, you're going, okay, I've got these members who aren't happy with this bill, right? I run the risk of putting on the floor in its current form and having a Democratic amendment come up to address these guys' concerns, and they vote for it. Then the Dems drive the train on this bill, and I don't want that to happen. I want a Republican amendment to address these concerns and have it be our bill, not theirs.
And Speaker Voss said he is optimistic that that compromise will be worked out by the Assembly session on October 22nd, falling.
Road projects. We talked about this all summer long, right?
Yeah.
How much we're going to bond, how much we're going to pay. Here's the first fallout. I-90 delayed 2 years. Run a road, delayed 2 to 3 years. I mean, this is the real impact of those decisions made in the budget of not doing $1.3 billion in bonding. Now, here's the other thing. Remember that $350 they held back in joint finance?
Yes.
Amy Loudenbach from Clinton, what's the first thing she says? I'd release all that money for I-90 to be expanded. That gets back to the issue we talked about summer of who's going to decide. You know, the political influence you could have over what project gets funded.
Yep.
She's in joint finance. She might have some say in that. Why should her project get funded and not Verona Road, for example? This is the rub going forward about this issue.
And Voss says the holdup on authorizing that additional $350 million is not the Assembly, it's Senate members of the Joint Finance Committee. Okay, before we finish, U.S. House Speaker John Boehner just announced that he's stepping down. Paul Ryan want the job?
No.
Paul Ryan's got his dream job.
He does.
Paul Ryan has got how many? Three kids at home? He said, I don't want to be in the road raising money constantly. And John Boehner was in Madison a month ago, whatever it was. He's on the road constantly raising money for members. You've got to do that as Speaker. Paul Ryan has no interest in that whatsoever. He wants to be in D.C. during the week, home on the weekends. He wants to, you know, dig into the nitty-gritty as a wonk, and that's what he wants to do.
And he can write his ticket down the road when he wants to without any kind of pressure.
Okay. Very
Plus,
good.
Who's going to run that caucus right now?
That's true.
That's the other question for you. It's not worth the heartache.
That's true. Brandon, political consultant and Wisconsinite board member, and former executive director of the GOP party. Thanks.
Your
pundit hat stayed on. Hey, before we leave, now that you no longer have to be a homer, Walker for president, who do you like for president?
I like Carly Fiorina.
Do you really?
I do. I'm very impressed. I love the way she goes at it in the debates. She's very straight on. I think she's very smart. I think she is a great addition to the public profile of the Republican Party. I know lots of folks like Marco Rubio, he too I think is great. To me, those two are probably the two moving forward I think the rest of the field should clear.
Okay, that's great.
Notice nobody's followed Walker's call yet, have they?
No, that's right. Nobody's accepted his challenge.
A bit of ego, if you will,
that's
for
right.
some of those guys.
Yeah. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 25th.